Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, welcome back to Adrenaline Realms Thriller Channel. I'm your host, Neil Heligers, and this is False Idols, episode 17. Enjoy.
Layla tried to sleep, but thoughts of the dig, plus the long nap she'd taken that afternoon, kept her awake for most of the night. She got out of bed after 7:30 to find a new text from Rami. It was an invitation to join him at Sanaa's apartment for lunch, accompanied by another adorable picture of Badru. Sanaa, he promised, would be delighted to see her. She thought of the little boy again. The little boy who could have been Rami. Layla told him she'd go. Rami responded with a string of happy emojis and the words, "Meet you at El Saida Zainab station at 12:30. She spent the morning reviewing her notes from the investigation, adding what she'd learned about Tanaka and what she'd seen at the dig. She composed several text messages to Rami, telling him that she couldn't come with him to visit Sanaa, but sent none of them. The truth was, she wanted to go. But she knew she had to be very careful. If anyone connected with Pierce or Rothkopf, for that matter, saw her with Rami, she could be in real trouble. By 11:30, Layla was dressed in black pants, a white blouse, and a red and black print cardigan, accessorized with a black hijab. She went downstairs and got in a cab, asking the driver to take her to the Giza Zoo, which was on the other side of the Nile, in the opposite direction from Manshiat Nasser. At the zoo, she went into the ladies' room and took off her sweater, leaving the simple white blouse and black pants. Then she pulled a pale blue hijab out of her purse and traded the black one for it. She finished the outfit with a large pair of sunglasses. Then she went back out to hail another cab. This one took her back across the river, followed her directions on a circuitous route through the city, and finally dropped her off a block from the El Saida Zainab station at 12:31 p.m. Rami was already there waiting for her. When he saw his sister, he looked confused. "What's with the hijab?" She'd forgotten to take it off, she realized, and quickly did so now, trying to come up with an explanation.
"It's not important. Never mind."
Still haunted by the boy at the dig, she pulled her little brother into a fierce hug.
"Are you all right?"
he asked.
"Get your shit together, Agent Aldeeb," she told herself.
She took a deep breath and smiled.
"A little nervous, maybe?"
"Don't be."
He started walking down the sidewalk, and she fell into step beside him.
"Sanaa and I have been talking about this. Sure, she wasn't too happy when you left home and left us behind." I had no way to bring you with me,
she began, but Rami held up a hand to stop her.
I know that, he said. So does Shana. I think having a baby has really changed her perspective on life.
She had to laugh.
Her perspective on life? She's 18!
He grinned, and it made him look like the little boy she remembered. They crossed the street, heading into their old neighborhood. Manshiat Nasser wasn't so bad on the outskirts, where it bordered respectable Cairo. The streets were narrow, and the apartments were small, but there were no piles of trash rotting on the sidewalk. Living conditions got worse as they approached the Mokattam Hills, which bordered Manshiat Nasser to the east. Garbage City, with its eternal stench, sprawled along the base of the cliffs. That's where Layla had grown up, and as far as she knew, where her mother, Halima, still lived. Sana had moved a few blocks farther away from the hills, to the relative comfort of a 300-square-foot apartment with electricity, and, most of the time, running water. Rami led the way into a red-brick apartment building, up two flights of stairs and down the hall to their sister's door. Layla braced herself as she knocked. The young woman who answered was about her height, but a little heavier, with curves where Layla wished she had them. Her dark, straight hair was pulled back into a ponytail, and her eyes were rimmed in black. Layla felt no spark of recognition. Shana might as well have been a stranger. Shana hugged Rami, then turned to the sister she hadn't seen or spoken to in 11 years. She hesitated for a moment, then hugged Layla too.
Welcome to my home.
Thank you for having me.
The exchange was a little stiff, but friendly enough. Shana ushered them inside. The tiny apartment was scrupulously clean and carefully organized, with every inch of space put to good use. The sofa folded out into a bed, and the kitchen table lay flat against the wall when not in use. Layla couldn't help thinking that, in Manhattan, this would be considered a trendy micro-apartment, renting for $1,000 a month. Shana went over to the wooden crib tucked in a corner and scooped up her baby, cooing to him as she turned him to face his aunt and uncle.
This is Badru.
Oh, he's beautiful, said Layla.
The kid had been cute in pictures, but in person, his bright, curious gaze and bubbly smile made him just about irresistible. She held out her arms, and Shana handed her Badru. Layla was dubious about having children of her own, but she was delighted by her nephew, making silly noises as he wrapped her finger in his tiny fist. She saw Sana and Rami exchange a distinctly conspiratorial look. They weren't plotting to get her settled down, too, were they? If either one of them mentioned a nice guy they knew who happened to be single, Layla was out of here. Sana put Badru on a blanket on the floor, keeping an eye on him as she served lunch. It was quite a feast, starting with flatbread and hummus, followed by a whole roast chicken, baked vegetables in a spicy tomato sauce, and cabbage leaves stuffed with rice. Layla couldn't help wondering how much of the family's weekly food budget had gone into this one meal, intended to demonstrate that they could afford it. Of course, Layla couldn't ask about money. She knew that her sister wouldn't take money from her. Maybe if she called it a college fund for Badru.
I'm sorry my husband couldn't join us,
Sana told them, clearly more proud than ashamed of the fact.
He works at the recycling plant.
Tarek's a great guy, you like him,
said Rami, automatically assuming that they would meet. Layla tried to steer the conversation away from herself as they talked and ate. She dismissed her fictional job in the comptroller's office as too boring, while asking more questions about Sana's family and Rami's engineering studies. She caught her brother glancing at the clock behind her. The second time he did it, she asked,
Are we keeping you from a hot date?
What? No,
he said, a little too defensively in Layla's opinion.
So it's not until later then,
she teased.
There isn't...
He looked so flustered that both his sisters had to laugh. Rami was saved by a knock at the door. He and Sana exchanged another significant look.
What's going on? Asked Layla.
Nothing, Sana said as she went to answer it. Now she sounded defensive. Layla stood up, looming ominously over her brother.
Rami?
Before he could answer her, Sana opened the door. Halima bustled in, handing her a small bag of lemons.
I got these from the nice woman upstairs.
Then she saw Layla and froze. Her mother had gotten old. That was the first thing that occurred to Layla, as her initial shock began to clear. Halima was only in her early 50s, but her hair had gone mostly gray, and her constant frown lines had settled into wrinkles, which deepened as she stared at her eldest child.
What are you doing here?
Layla glared at Sana and Rami.
Getting ambushed?
Rami approached her, holding up his hands in a gesture of peace.
I know you're angry, and I'm sorry for tricking you.
He turned to his mother.
Both of you. But Layla won't be in Cairo long enough to convince you to talk to each other. Talk?
She scoffed.
I have nothing to say.
She started for the door, but Rami caught her arm to stop her.
Please, Mama, don't you think it's time for you to forgive each other?
Halima jerked her arm away.
And what do you think I've done that needs forgiving? I just meant that... Are you suggesting it was my fault that your sister abandoned her family?
She demanded, fixing him with a withering stare.
That I somehow drove her away? Is that what you think?
Before she could stop herself, Layla stepped between them, as she'd done so many times in their childhood, coming to her brother's defense.
Stop it. I don't like being manipulated either, but he was just trying to help.
She shot him a look.
In his own completely misguided way. You have no right to lecture me about my own children,
Halima said coldly.
Not after you turned your back on them. On all of us. I went to college,
Layla shouted, warning herself not to get dragged into the same old argument, but unable to help it.
Some parents might have even been proud of their daughter for earning a full scholarship. Your family needed you here. To do what? Earn a little extra money?
She thought about the boy at the dig site again, then pushed the image away.
The family was doing fine. Baba was getting steady work. Don't you dare talk about your father,
cried Halima.
You didn't even have the decency to be at his funeral. You're the one who told me never to come back.
11 years of pent-up anger and resentment came pouring out. As the two women shouted, Badru started to cry. Sana quickly picked him up, stroking his back as she spoke earnestly to her mother.
Please, stop. This isn't how family should behave.
Halima jerked her chin at Layla.
She doesn't know the meaning of the word. I've never seen such a selfish child. Selfish? You thought only about what you wanted, no one else.
Layla flinched, stung by the accusation.
We tried so hard to teach you respect so you could grow up to be a good person, a good Christian. But you decided long ago that your ignorant family was holding you back. Perhaps it was for the best that you left. And that you'll be leaving again soon.
No, that's not, she started to say, but her mother was already walking out the door, closing it firmly behind her. For a long moment, Badru's crying was the only sound. Rami went to Layla, reaching out to lay a hand on her shoulder.
I'm so sorry. It wasn't supposed to be like that. I trusted you,
she said, shaking off his hand. Ignoring his and Sana's pleas to stay, she kissed Badru on the forehead, then turned and left. She walked the 3 miles back to Garden City at a furious march, trying to put everything about Manshiat Nasser, her childhood, and her whole damn family behind her. How could she have been stupid enough to get suckered in by Rami's happy delusions? Hadn't she learned at Quantico to never, ever let her guard down? She knew better. At least, she would from now on. She arrived home with a tension headache and the sour burn of acid in her gut. Layla changed into her favorite sweats and plopped down in front of her 50-inch plasma screen to watch something mindless. Then she remembered the fundraiser she was supposed to go to with James. Shit. The thought of smiling and chatting with a bunch of self-satisfied society types all night made her stomach start churning again. Maybe. Just maybe she didn't have to. There would be no one related to her investigation at the event, other than the Rothkopfs. All she had to do was call James and tell him she couldn't go. He'd want to know why, of course, which she could hardly explain. She would just have to say she was sick. She had never been so happy to reach voicemail.
I'm so sorry to do this to you, but I can't make it to the fundraiser tonight. I ate some bad kofta from that guy on Nubar Street, and I've been sick all afternoon. I really am sorry. Call me later and tell me how it went.
She felt relieved to be off the hook, but terrible about once again lying to James. This was a relatively innocuous lie, the kind that normal couples sometimes told each other. But somehow, that didn't make it any better. She had dozed off in front of the TV when the doorbell startled her awake. She was just getting up to answer it when she heard James calling through the door.
Layla, are you all right?
Shit.
She should have known that James would be thoughtful enough to come check on her, and that the doorman, having seen him with her so often, would welcome him into the building and send him right up. She opened the door to find James all dressed up for the evening, in a dark gray suit and maroon tie, looking at her and her ratty sweatpants with concern.
How are you feeling?
The sight of him triggered a rush of happiness so strong, it scared her.
I've been better, she said, honestly enough.
He came in and wrapped his arms around her. Then he stepped back, holding up a plastic bottle filled with a thick, milky liquid.
This will help. My father got it from a doctor in Johannesburg when he had food poisoning.
She peered at the faded label. It was written in Afrikaans, which she couldn't read.
What is it?
I'm not sure what it's called in English. All I know is that I've never seen Dad as sick as he was that night. He took 2 tablespoons of this, and half an hour later he was as good as new.
She put a hand to her stomach as if feeling a wave of nausea.
I don't know. I think I just need to rest.
James set the bottle on the kitchen counter.
Well, it's here if you want it. Can I get you anything else? Maybe some tea?
It's sweet of you to check on me, but you don't have to stay. I know you've been looking forward to this fundraiser, and I really am sorry I can't be there.
She felt terrible about bailing on him. Maybe her mother had been right to call her selfish.
You can't help it if you're sick,
he assured her, making her feel even worse. He led her over to the couch and sat with her, pulling her close.
I don't want you to worry about anything right now. Just close your eyes and relax.
As he began stroking her hair, she did allow herself to relax, shutting out her job, her fake identity, Pierce Rothkopf, the Mukharib, everything but this moment, feeling safe and warm in his arms.
I wish we could stay like this,
he said softly, voicing her thoughts.
Just you and me?
Mm-hmm, she murmured in agreement.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
On a remote island in frigid Lake Superior, a fabricated creature birthed from the mind of a disturbed genius stalks the very people who created it. Ancestor, by number one New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler, is a classic tale of science gone horribly wrong. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
She had reached a state of utter contentment when James said,
"There's something else I wanted to give you."
Her eyes popped open as she felt him reaching into his pocket. "It's too soon for a ring," she thought desperately. "Please don't be a ring." She sat up to find him holding a black velvet jewelry box, too big for a ring. James opened the box to reveal a simple string of pearls.
"These belong to my mother. Seemed appropriate for tonight."
Layla was touched and terrified at the same time. His mother's necklace felt like an even more intimate gift than an engagement ring.
"But if I'm not going,
I still want you to have them."
He held out the box. She took it.
"They're beautiful, thank you."
She looked up to see him gazing at her with pure, unmistakable love. As he opened his mouth to say it, she bolted off the couch, went to the kitchen counter, and picked up the bottle of medicine.
"Two tablespoons, right?"
"Right."
She tracked down a tablespoon in the gourmet kitchen she never used and gulped down a dose of the chalky, bitter stuff. Layla thought there was a decent chance it would actually make her sick, which would be exactly what she deserved. James, however, deserved better, so she declared herself cured in time to join him at the fundraiser. She changed into a royal blue, full-skirted dress and stood in front of the full-length mirror in her bedroom, shaking off Layla El-Deeb's complicated angst and embracing the carefree simplicity of her alter ego. James came in and stood behind her, admiring her reflection.
"How did I get so lucky?"
he asked, carefully kissing her cheek so he didn't smudge her makeup. Then he held up the string of pearls.
"May I?"
She nodded, and he gently draped them around her neck. He looked up, meeting her eyes in the mirror, and declared the result perfect. They arrived at the Semiramis Intercontinental Hotel an hour late. As soon as they walked into the Cleopatra ballroom, Bennett came striding up to his son, irritated.
"I was starting to get concerned."
Then he saw the necklace Layla was wearing and stopped. For a moment, she was afraid he'd object, and she'd be stuck in the middle of another family blowout. But his expression softened, and he said,
"Those suit you."
The fundraiser was an elegant affair, with understated navy blue and gold decor that didn't try to compete with the spectacular panoramic view of the city. Pictures of the girls who had benefited from the Girls' Education Initiative sat on every table. There was no denying that Rothkopf did a lot of good with his ill-gotten gains, which only made Layla's job more complicated, she thought, taking a sip of champagne as she circulated through the crowd. Why can't the bad guys be pure evil and the good guys paragons of virtue? Rothkopf had flown in several of the scholarship recipients, now grown women, to mingle with donors and inspire them to be even more generous. Layla listened to them describe the challenges they'd faced as intelligent girls trapped by poverty and restrictive cultures. It was all very familiar. Right up to the part where a bunch of rich white people had shown up to rescue them, she thought, with a surprising burst of resentment. Nobody had rescued her. And nobody was rescuing that little boy she'd seen out in the desert, risking his life to feed his family. Her gaze fell on Mackie, standing unobtrusively by the stage, wearing a perfectly tailored suit and his usual scowl. I know just how you feel, buddy, she thought, for the first time in their brief acquaintance.
Are you all right?
Asked James, startling her. Fine, she assured him, giving his arm a squeeze, forcing Layla Noir back to the surface. That stuff you brought me was amazing.
Good.
Everyone took their seats for dinner and speeches. The meal was an expertly prepared salmon fillet with asparagus, with individual chocolate soufflés for dessert. Layla couldn't help thinking that Shana's roast chicken had been more satisfying. Bennett Rothkopf, sitting across from her at the round 8-person table, quickly downed 3 glasses of scotch, with a 4th ready and waiting. She wondered if he was feeling the pressure of his stagnant business and growing debt, despite the outward show of extravagance. James certainly was, and he wasn't even the one responsible for the whole mess. The executive director of the Girls' Education Initiative finished her speech, then introduced Rothkopf. He took the stage to loud, enthusiastic applause. He held up a hand to quiet his guests.
Thank you. Thank you, that's very kind.
The slight unsteadiness of his voice was the only hint that he was buzzed. If there was one skill Rothkopf had unquestionably mastered, it was putting on a good front.
As much as I appreciate your support, I'm not the one who deserves it. The woman who does is, tragically, no longer with us. My beloved wife, Alice.
He paused for another, more subdued round of applause.
I wish all of you could have known her. She was an inspiration to everyone, myself included. This event, supporting an organization that was so close to her heart, is my attempt to keep that inspiration alive.
His voice caught, this time from emotion. Layla saw James struggling not to get choked up as well. She'd felt nothing like this kind of grief when her father died. It had been more like a relief, which only now struck her as its own kind of sad.
Of course, the greatest gift she left to me is our son, James.
More applause as he gestured grandly toward James.
I probably don't say this enough,
Bennett told him.
But I see more of her in you every day. Her kindness, her warmth.
Now the 4 scotches were catching up with him, making him well up with easy tears. To Layla's surprise, James went up onto the stage and hugged his father, drawing a collective aww from the guests. Rothkopf returned to the microphone.
I'm a very lucky man with a wonderful family. And I'm not only talking about this kid.
He gave James a playful punch on the arm, prompting a few laughs.
I'm talking about honorary family. Friends, colleagues, community. You know who you are.
He nodded to several of the guests. Then his gaze fell on Layla.
There are some people who feel like family the moment you meet them.
If Layla could have ducked under the tablecloth and disappeared, she would have done it in a heartbeat. But Rothkopf was already pointing her out and telling the audience,
Layla Noir has not only proven herself invaluable to my business, but priceless to my boy.
More laughs. Now James was beckoning her on stage.
Come on up here, Layla.
It seemed useless to refuse, so she decided to get it over with. She plastered on a smile and walked up 3 short steps to join the Rothkopf men on stage. Cameras and phones appeared in the hands of every guest, snapping pictures as Bennett, always recognizing a good photo op, put his arms around James and Layla, with the Girls' Education Initiative banner behind them.
This is my hope for the future right here,
he announced. Layla found her smile becoming more genuine as she stood there with her honorary family, savoring the feeling of acceptance, of belonging, that she'd been chasing all her life. But it was all based on a lie.
I'm going to get some air, she told James.
He immediately looked worried.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. Stay with your dad. This is your night.
She slipped out from under Bennett's arm and kissed James on the cheek, then made her escape to the balcony. The night was cold, but it was worth getting some goosebumps to have the outdoor space to herself. She took several deep breaths, focusing on the sensation of the air moving in and out of her lungs, and reminding herself that this long, awful day was almost over. She heard the balcony door open behind her and turned, thinking it might be James. She was surprised, not very happily, to see Mackie.
You may have fooled the Rothkopfs,
he said, as he walked toward her with slow, deliberate steps.
And you may have fooled everyone in that room, but you haven't fooled me.
A brief burst of panic flared in her chest, but she kept her expression neutral.
Am I supposed to know what that means?
He closed the distance between them in 2 strides.
Don't fuck with me.
Wouldn't dream of it,
she managed, trying to sound braver than she felt. She evaluated her chances of slipping past him and back into the ballroom. They weren't good.
I looked into you when you started sniffing around the Rothkopfs,
he informed her. She had to trust that Pierce had been thorough in setting up her false identity. If Maggie found anything wrong, she told herself, he would have gone straight to Bennett. He wouldn't be hinting around, trying to make me reveal something.
Good for you, she said.
A brief tightening of his jaw told her that wasn't the answer he was hoping for.
I don't know who you really are or what you want with the Rothkopfs, but I'm not buying your sweet little heiress routine.
Layla said nothing, resisting the urge to offer a useless denial, refusing to let him pressure her into making a mistake. She'd already given him enough reason to be suspicious by poking around Bennett's office. Mackie leaned in close enough for her to feel the heat radiating from his body. His voice remained calm and implacable.
James likes you, and Bennett likes you. So I'm giving you 1 chance to walk away, make your excuses and get out of their lives. If you don't, I will find out what you're doing and there will be consequences, do you understand?
He stood perfectly still, staring down at her, and she had no doubt he could wait all night for an answer.
Yes, she said finally.
Good.
With that, he stepped back and returned to the ballroom. The cold struck Layla all at once and she shivered violently. She hurried inside, looking around for James, and saw him talking with one of the graduates of the initiative. He was listening, paying close attention to every word the young woman said instead of just waiting for his chance to talk. James may have grown up as a privileged only child, but he was the least self-centered person Layla had ever met. And she loved him for it. Both Laylas did. The realization felt even more dangerous than Mackie's threats. She had to get out of here, away from both of them. Right now. As James finished his conversation, she went up to him and said,
"My stomach is acting up again. I'm going to head home."
He looked at her, concerned.
"Let me take you."
"That's sweet, but I want you to stay. I know how important this fundraiser is to both of you."
Before he could protest, as she knew he would, Layla kissed his cheek and said,
"I'll call you in the morning, okay?"
She fled, out of the ballroom and down the hall to the bank of elevators, jabbing the call button repeatedly.
"Layla!"
James had come after her, of course. She should have just left without telling him. How perfect would he think she was then?
"What's wrong?"
he asked.
"My stomach."
He looked at her.
"What's really wrong?"
She had to do it. Had to push him away before the situation spun even further out of control.
"It's too much."
"What is?"
"All this honorary family stuff, playing house in New York, giving me your mother's necklace, calling me on stage to pose for a goddamned family portrait."
He stood there, stunned by the sudden onslaught.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you uncomfortable. I thought..."
Layla felt a tightness in her chest, and it only made her push harder.
"You thought that any girl would jump at the chance to be a Rothkopf."
"You know that's not true."
Now James was getting angry too.
"Good," she thought. "Tell me to go to hell. Better use your name to snag an heiress before daddy blows the family fortune."
"I don't want an heiress, I want you,"
he shouted.
"I love you."
His words drove the air out of her like a blow to the gut. James lowered his voice and went on.
"I know that scares the hell out of you. It scares me too. Because I've never been so afraid of losing anything or anyone in my life."
She stared at him, speechless. She knew that he would lose her. And she would lose him on the day he found out the truth. Or, if it was up to Mackie, a lot sooner than that. The fact that their time together was limited made it only more urgent to tell him before another moment passed.
"I love you too," she said.
He kissed her, and she let the feeling sweep everything else away. She held him close, not daring to let go. His driver took them to her building and they stumbled in the door of her condo, tugging desperately at each other's clothes. Layla drew him into the bedroom, unbuttoning his pants along the way. As they fell onto the bed, still kissing, he stopped just long enough to ask,
"Are you sure?"
She'd been the one to put on the brakes when they started getting physical before. Now she was flooring the gas pedal.
"Yes," she said.
She pulled him on top of her and gladly lost herself in the pure physical bliss.
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols. Created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Helligers. Audio editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.